Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show, Tucson's most trusted voice for news and information. I'm Ben Bueller-Garcia, sitting in for Bill here in the Green Things Socolo Village studio. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. And please, listeners, send some prayers up for Bill and Ann. I know they could use those right now. Listen, our first half of the show, we're going to talk about lots of different topics, but all related to health, which is something that should be important to all of us. Joining us on the Rincon Ventures live line is Will Humble. He's the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association and the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Will, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks.
So we've got a lot to cover here, Will. Just explain to me, though, what is the role of the Arizona Public Health Association? What is your mission?
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit member organization, so people join our organization, and most people are members because they want to influence public health policy in Arizona. So one of the things we do is during the legislative session, read all the various bills down at the legislature, figure out which ones are good, and try to get those across the line. And if we see problems with certain bills, we'll work against those or get them modified so that they're better. We do other kinds of advocacy at the federal level. And then the other piece of our mission is really professional development. So we have conferences and webinars, and I've got my blog, and I do a member update. So we're just a member organization of people who are interested in public health and want to make positive change, really.
So you're basically a business organization for healthcare professionals.
Yeah, we're a member organization for public health and healthcare folks. We have about 900 to 1,000 members.
Wow. Okay. So speaking of advocacy and lobbying, if you will. I'm told not to use that word in polite company, so let's just say advocacy. A little bit of a kerfuffle with the new director of, who was the woman who was supposed to be the director of Arizona Department of Health Services with the legislature, right?
Yeah, so, I know Bill has had Dr. Cullen on the show many times throughout the pandemic and even afterwards. Dr. Teresa Cullen was the first pick to lead the state health department by Governor Hobbs. And there's this new committee down at the state legislature called the Director Nomination Committee. But it's basically run by Senator Hoffman, who's a person up here, represents the Queen Creek area and the Phoenix area. And he has really been just derailing and stonewalling Governor Hobbs' nominees. And when Teresa Cullen was up for her hearing in February, Senator Hoffman and that committee, the Republicans on that committee, had made up their mind they weren't going to approve Dr. Cullen for the position ahead of time. And just so they had, they ran her through the ringer for about 3.5 hours. And in the end, the committee recommended to the full Senate that they sent not approve her, and Dr. Cullen removed her name at the same time that the Senate had voted her down on a voice vote. Anyway, to make a long story shorter, Governor Hobbs has had a hard time finding a permanent nominee for that position ever since, and last week Governor Hobbs said that her pick would in the end be this person who is in the acting role or had been in the acting role the first 6 months. Her name's Jenny Cunico. I don't know her. I mean, I know a lot of people in the public health world. I've met her, but I don't really know her. But when you compare her credentials to Dr. Cullen, to Cullen's credentials, it's no contest. I mean, Dr. Cullen has been in public health for 25 years, managed organizations by over $1 billion and thousands of employees, and I think she would have been a superb health director. Jenny Cullen her degree is in marriage therapy, I think, in psychology, and it doesn't have a very long track record in public health. So all in all, it's a little disappointing that this process that the Senate has come up with is running off badly needed talent, in my opinion, at these state agencies. I hope it changes next year.
Well, and I mean, the Department of Health Services, that's a pretty important, you know, particularly given what we just went through with COVID and who knows what else is coming down the line. I mean, that's not a seat you want to have vacant. And I don't know, I looked right. a little bit at Jennifer's resume, and I mean, she seems to have the administrative chops, but I don't know so much about the healthcare side.
Or public health.
Yeah.
And it really, honestly, on the administrative side, it's pretty thin. You know, I don't know what to say. I hope it turns out okay. But, you know, you're referring to the pandemic and all, but there's a lot of day-to-day stuff that agency does that people don't really hear about. Like, you know, they assure the health and safety of people in nursing homes, assisted living centers, hospitals, behavioral health facilities, child care facilities. They regulate the medical marijuana, the retail marijuana program. They run the women, infant, and children program, the WIC program across the state. They run the Arizona State Laboratory. They're responsible for all the vital records, birth and death certificates of the state. And they run the Arizona State Hospital, which is our state psychiatric facility. So it's a big job with a lot of responsibilities. And I just leave it there, I guess.
Well, I consider myself much better educated, Will. Thanks for that. So speaking, kind of coming back to the COVID thing, that's not gone away. It seems like folks have kind of forgotten about it a little bit, but is there a new strain? Are we getting more surges? And I think from your website, I saw that there's a sort of a 6-month window or a pattern that's being followed now.
Yeah, well, it has been from the beginning. So,
okay. Yeah.
So, bottom line, from the very beginning of this, you know, more than 3 years ago, the virus has become more and more transmissible and less dangerous, or what we call virulent in the business. And that's continued over the course of the last 3 years. And so the virus, it becomes less and less dangerous in terms of the kinds of symptoms that it gives people, less and less lethal, but more and more contagious. And the reason it's on a 6-month cycle is because the infection waves tend to happen at the same periodicity or at the same time as people's antibodies begin to wear off. And so you have usually a big surge in infections, not necessarily serious anymore, but in, December and January, and a lot of people get infected. Some know it, some don't. But the antibodies begin to wear off after about 6 months. That's the life cycle of those antibodies within, you know, the immune system. And then you start to get another wave 6 months later because people are susceptible again. So that's, I think, why it's on a 6-month cycle. And nationally, we are seeing this new variant, which I described in the blog, causing a slight uptick in hospitalizations. But we're not seeing that yet in Arizona. It's actually down a little bit. So we're not seeing the summer bump that we had seen for the last 3 years yet in Arizona. But again, I don't want listeners to think that, like, we're back in the situation that we were in 2020 or 2021. This is, the virus has mutated to the point where it's a lot less serious than it was at the beginning.
It's no longer a death sentence. I mean, it's kind of, yeah. So I
right. And people have been infected more than once before. And most people have gotten the vaccine and boosters. So that's playing into this as well in terms of, the public health impact.
So seeing so I'm talking to an advocate, I'd like to propose something to you. I helped my mother-in-law with her. We got her one of those little at-home COVID tests. And I open up the directions, Will, and this is like 4x4. It looks like the blueprint to the space shuttle. And I mean, I'm trying to walk through this thing to make sure it's done right. And she tested negative, thank goodness. But I don't know if I trust my hand at that. Is there any data on how many false positives are coming out of these home tests, or maybe people actually are infected and they didn't do it right, and so they think they're in the clear?
Yeah, well, you have to. If you do the rapid test right, it's really quite accurate, more than 95% accurate. But you have to do it right in order for it. In other words, if you don't mix it right, if you don't collect the sample right, if you don't leave it in the correct amount of time, then you're going to get a result that's not reliable. So that's really the main thing, is to be able to follow the instructions like you just described. But if you follow the instructions, it's the rapid test is every bit as good as the old, remember the PCR tests?
Sure.
That people, you just have to go into one of those mobile clinics and stuff. That's a different kind of test that is more sensitive. But for the purposes of where we are in this pandemic now, I think the rapid test is really the way to go, because you get immediate results and you know right away. But you do have to follow the instructions. And so you may need to, and like my parents are 90, they wanted to get a test. This is more than once. And I just went over there and did it for them, because they wouldn't have been able to figure it out, I don't think.
Well, we're coming up on a break, but just one other quick question while we're on this topic. What about treatment? Have we pretty much settled on a series of treatments that we are effective for this?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is to decide whether you want to use treatment or not. And that's the decision that a healthcare provider, nurse practitioner, or doctor would make, an assessment about whether treatment is doing more harm than good.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a lot of cases, you wouldn't do any treatment at all. Now, for an elderly patient or somebody with chronic medical conditions, they may want to do some treatment. And really the main line treatment these days is the antiviral pills, just a pill that you would take that slow the replication of the virus in the body and make easier for you to clear it, because you're not making as much virus. There is some, when you stop taking it, there's sometimes a rebound effect where you start replicating the virus again. But that's really the main line treatment. The really expensive infusions, which are monoclonal antibodies, that was a $10,000 treatment. That's
Yikes.
Really gone by the wayside.
Okay.
Because the virus has changed a lot since 2021, when that monoclonal antibody was made. So that's not really a treatment anymore. It's really just a Paxlovid, which is the antiviral pill.
Okay, we'll tell you what, we're going to need to take a break here right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. If you have a question or comment, give us a call on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property line. That's 790-2040. Dan gave us a call. Dan, why don't you hold through the break, and we'll get your question when we come back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller-Garcia sitting in for Bill here in the Green Things Socolow Village Studios. We're talking about public health with Will Humble, who's the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Boy, Will, you got him talking. We got a call. Dan called us on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management Live Line. Dan, what's your question or comment for Will?
The comment is, let's get off politics and talk about medicine. And At a board of directors meeting recently, our doctors on the board agreed that nothing was being said about all the diseases that are coming across the border that we had solved 50 to 100 years ago, and now we're getting them back again, weird diseases from all over the world, and we're not even talking about it.
Dan, the board of directors of whom?
Well, I shouldn't bring up a name, but it was a Texas company.
Okay. Well, what's your, because I think he makes a good point, Will. I just, in fact, earlier this week we had a 3-star general on who was in charge of NORTHCOM and was responsible for the border, and he was talking a little bit about how really that's it's not secure, and it's not just, you know, bad guys, but is there any policy, Will, and inform us on this about checking these folks?
Well, are you talking about this? So the ICE, you know, when persons are, well, first of all, there's two categories of people, right? There's three categories. You have people seeking refugee status. Then there's people who are apprehended at the border by CBP and put into other types of facilities. And then there's the people that escape through the system and are able to get in without being detected. Now, you know, obviously the screening can't happen for those persons that are able to evade the system. I can tell you that for those people that request asylum through the system, there are definitely screenings for persons for infectious diseases. And during COVID, they were offering vaccines to those persons. I can't address your question without, you know, hearing the exact the illness that you're talking about.
All right.
I can tell you this, that most of these people that come across the border are caught and released, and they're not screened whatsoever. And I don't know who's telling you that they are, but there's too many Border Patrol people that say that they are absolutely not.
All right, Dan. I
was referring to the persons who are coming through the asylum system,
who are actually processed. So we've got control, hands on. So, all right, Dan. It's a very interesting point. Thanks for calling the Buckmaster Show and bringing that up. We're going to be talking a little bit with Will about vaccinations and kind of along the lines of what you mentioned. So stick around. You're probably going to want to hear that part of our discussion. Will, not related to a disease, but still a very bad situation. I do briefings out at the local Air Force base for all the new arrivals. And for some of them, it's their first experience of the desert. And, you know, they're here in August. And, you know, I shared with them the latest data I can find, Will, 103 heat-related deaths just in Pima and Maricopa County this year. That doesn't include border crossers. We haven't found yet. This is pretty bad.
Well, it's especially bad for people who are unhoused. So by far, the number one risk factor, and it's not even close, is persons who don't have housing. So the homeless population is at by far the highest risk for heat-related illness, in particular dying from the heat. And it's intuitive as to why. I mean, they don't have a place with air conditioning and a place to live. And so that's far and away the biggest risk factor. Other risk factors, let's take the homeless population out for a second. The second biggest risk factor is just being male. If you look in Arizona, even after you exclude the homeless population, 3/4 of the
heat-related illnesses are among men, and especially men over 50. And so that's really from recreational and occupational exposure.
Okay. So it's not the way we're built. It's just the nature of what we're out there doing on a day-to-day basis, generally, more so.
And judgment. I think women are better at understanding limitations and not knowing. I mean, they know that it's really, really hot and maybe they shouldn't play 18 holes.
So,
and men
decide
to do it anyway.
Process of elimination there. So the governor's declared, Governor Hobbs has declared emergency, freed up about $200,000 for in additional funds. When we talk about heat mitigation measures, are we generally talking about those things like cooling centers and facilities where people who happen to be on the street or can just get out of the heat for a little bit and not suffer a stroke?
Yeah, so what Governor Hobbs did was two things last week. One was the emergency declaration, that got all the headlines, and that was with about the $200,000. To me, that was the far less important of the two things that she did. The second was an executive order that tells the state agency, Department of Administration, Department of Division of Emergency Management, the Health Department, to come and her Office of Resiliency to come up with a report by March 1st. With a better plan for how to deal with extreme heat events in the future. And I think those reports, I hope they reflect what you just talked about, better and more efficient ways of having the cooling centers set up in the right places and open for the right amount of time and with the right services. And combine that with doing something about the affordable housing crisis that we have in the state.
Yeah, that's a whole nother show. Don't get me started on that.
Which is part of this whole thing, because affordable housing is part of the homeless situation. So now, those reports are no good unless they're translated into actual policies that, prior to next summer. So yet to be seen how good those reports will be, and then whether it gets translated into policy.
Well, there's two other kind of related questions that I saw, and maybe we're just down to about 4 minutes here. Maybe you can answer them both to me. So I saw a very scary statistic that the statewide vaccination rate for kindergarten children against measles is only 91%, which I'm guessing is not where we want it to be. And then you were talking a little bit about now with all these school vouchers out there, the extent to which we're certain that some of these children are getting the vaccinations that they're supposed to have. I mean, I know growing up, they were sticking stuff in my arm all the time. That's been years ago, but that's a trend in a scary direction. Coming back to what Dan said, I thought we had beat measles here in the United States, and now maybe it's making a comeback.
Yeah, it's making a comeback, mostly related to international travel, and it comes back to a community with low vaccination rates. So we have a unique situation in Arizona where there's some counties like Pima where you're out has great vaccination rates. Same with Yuma. Very good vaccination rates in some parts of the state, but we have others like Yavapai and Mojave County with very low vaccination rates. In fact, only 72% of kindergartners in Yavapai County are vaccinated with MMR. It's up in the high 90s in Pima and Yuma counties. And so we have this sort of unequal playing field in terms of what the vaccination rates. And so we've got some parts of the state that are really primed. If an international travel case would come back from, say, for example, Pakistan or India, something like that, with a case, which there's a lot of measles in India and Pakistan, for example. And that could really rifle through a community like Prescott, Chino Valley, et cetera, because of the low vaccination rates. I know we're out of time, but all the schools are required to post and collect that information about the kids' vaccination rates, including the new private schools that are popping up because of the ESA vouchers. But my blog post was really about, a lot of these are really small schools, and they may not know what they're supposed to do in terms of checking the kids' vaccination status as required.
Well, I'm old enough to remember, Will, when they used to have, I can't remember what they were, but basically parents would have parties to try and get all the kids infected so they could build that natural immunity. But now we're in the era of anti-vaxxing. And I don't have children, so I'm not quite sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, well, those parties you're talking about were before the vaccine existed, and I have mumps myself. I'm 63. I have measles too. Chickenpox, of course. All those are vaccine preventable diseases now. And the idea is if you keep a high vaccination rate, then those can be gone for good. But we're continuing to erode that vaccination level. And I'm not sure what the answer is.
So correct me if I'm wrong then. So the vaccines for children, for school-aged children, are not required. That's not a law. It's just a strong suggestion, or?
Yeah, kind of, in our state. Now, states like Mississippi, everything from Mississippi to California, for example, it's absolutely required, unless there's a medical reason why the kid can't get vaccinated, to attend school. Our state has what's called a personal exemption, which means that parents can just say, I really don't want my kid vaccinated, and then that's the end of it. You know, many states, not most states, don't have that kind of permissive policy. We do have that kind of policy in Arizona, and it's resulting in lower vaccination levels.
Will Humble, thanks so much for spending some time and informing not just the host here, but our listeners today here on the Buckmaster Show. We'll have you back again soon.
Yeah, thanks. And I'm thinking about Bill.
There we go. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. If you'd like to give us a call, 790-2040. Lots of interesting stuff on the show coming right up. Stick around.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill here in the Green Thing Socola Village Studios. Hey, listen, it's not too early to begin planting your flower and garden planting. Visit our friends at Green Things, 3384 North River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park. over 13 acres of options for your home gardening needs, and more importantly, experts there to help you make the right selections. I was just down there a couple weeks ago exploring what they would recommend for my fall garden, and I'm excited about ready to get out there and dig in the dirt. While you're there, don't forget to visit Socolo Village for Latin American art and furniture. That's greenthingsaz.com and Socolo Village, that's Socolo with a Z, village.com. We're now going to stick kind of on the same healthcare theme we've been touching about today. Joining us on the Rincon Ventures live line is Dr. John, let me get this right, John Galgioni. How'd I do?
Pretty close. Probably called worse.
Pretty close. We'll just call him Dr. John. He's the head of the U of A Valley Fever Center for Excellence. I didn't know there was such a thing, but this is the season, is it not, Doctor?
Well, as it turns out, it is, in that we now have identified a method using Banner Health Urgent Care patient activity to discover when patients who are seen in urgent care end up with a diagnosis of valley fever pneumonia. And this allows us to actually have a forecasting tool to tell the rest of the community and actually physicians also that the disease is active just like we tell people when influenza is active in the community.
Now, Doctor, there we're just talking about COVID in the last couple of segments. The symptoms, well, what are the symptoms of valley fever, and is it easy for someone to get confused? They think they may be experiencing early pneumonia or COVID when it's actually valley fever?
It's absolutely overlapping syndromes. So if you have a respiratory illness and the doctor says that looks like you have pneumonia, it could be due to influenza, it could be due to COVID, it could be due to a bacteria, or in Tucson, it can be due to valley fever.
And if folks think if they don't know, they're experiencing symptoms, obviously, is there a test they can get at their local drugstore, or they need to go somewhere in particular to get a test, or how do you resolve it?
Well, there is a test, and in fact, it requires the laboratory test to tell you which of the various things that's going on. Unfortunately, right now, it's not point of care, and you can't get the test at a drugstore like you can now for COVID, but it can be ordered by any physician, and certainly any urgent care can do that, as well as emergency rooms or patients that are admitted to the hospital. It's a blood test. It's not a very difficult test, and the only sort of drawback is the test result doesn't come back for 2 or 3 days. But with that test, it can tell you if it's positive that you don't have a bacterial infection or a viral infection. And so all sorts of care that you would otherwise have to sort of guess at or use empirically can be stopped.
So it's almost a process of elimination to some extent.
Right. Actually a lot of people who get diagnosed with pneumonia are treated as if they have a bacterial problem because that's an important cause of pneumonia and you don't want to delay that. But if you have a fungal infection, the treatments, like the antibiotics you use for bacterial infections, have no benefit. In fact, they have several downsides, cost being one of them, but also side effects and increasing antibiotic drug resistance.
So if I get my numbers right, about 150,000 cases nationwide annually, two-thirds of which are in Arizona. What makes us so lucky?
It comes with the territory, literally. The infection, valley fever, is a fungal infection that's endemic to certain parts of the United States and other parts of the Western Hemisphere, actually, but especially the 90 miles or 150 miles between Tucson and Phoenix in the Sonoran Desert regions, because that's where the fungus grows. And when the rains come, when we do get rains, there's a bloom of the fungus in the soil, which increases the number of spores so that when the weather dries out, those spores can get in the air. And those spores are very small. They grow, they can travel miles. And so you don't really have to be out on the desert. You can just live in downtown Tucson and get infected with these spores. And so that's what makes it an endemic infection. And we're one of those major endemic regions.
But this is not going to take someone's life, is it? I mean, you just kind of feel junky for a while, or?
Well, it is a spectrum. Right? The good news is 2 out of 3 people who get infected never know it. They don't have an illness whatsoever. or at least something that is significant enough to seek medical attention. But a third of people have an illness that lasts often weeks to many months and can be really incapacitating for long periods of time. And then a small percentage of people get very serious disease that can be life-threatening. And there are about 140 or so deaths per year in the country. So two-thirds of those deaths are occurring in Arizona.
So I tell you, the one thing I love about guest hosting the Buckmaster Show is I learn a lot by talking to his excellent guests. So two questions. So this is, because it's spore-based, it's not, you can't build up a, it's not like COVID where, or something else, or measles or some of the childhood illnesses where if you've had it, you're protected, right? I mean, you could get it every summer.
Well, actually, no. It turns out that people who get over valley fever are probably, well, we think almost in all cases are protected for the rest of their life against another infection from valley fever if they're exposed again. And that actually is the reason why interest in a vaccine has been very, very keen. And the University of Arizona has developed a vaccine that's now in USDA application to become a vaccine to prevent valley fever in dogs. And that's in partnership with a commercial company called Anavive. And we hope that this vaccine will become available to veterinarians within a year. And I'm very hopeful that we can continue this campaign and bring it to humans as well. So it's a very exciting prospect.
And that's outstanding. I want to learn more about that because we're just coming down to the end of the segment real quick. Just to clarify, this is, it has to be inhaled, right? You can't absorb something like this through the skin.
That's right.
Okay.
It's a respiratory infection, and it also is not communicable. You get it from spores that come out of the dirt, and once you get infected, you're at no risk to other people. So you don't need to be quarantined around valley fever, but it'd be very good if we had a vaccine to prevent this entirely.
And it's also a threat to animals?
It's a very big problem in dogs and actually other mammals. Some of the mammals in various zoos get this. Primates especially are very susceptible to this. Occasionally horses can become sick with valley fever, but especially important is the impact of this disease on dogs.
So what are the things, Doctor, is the Valley Fever Center for Excellence developing? What kind of new tools have you put in your toolbox there besides a vaccine?
Well, besides the vaccine, I mentioned if we had a test that was point of care. So if you went to a doctor's office and they said, well, this test we just did tells you have valley fever, that would be a game changer because all sorts of management could be changed if we had a diagnosis right away. We're involved with trying to help a company develop that point of care test. And also it'd be valuable to have drugs to cure this disease. And we're involved in some studies doing that as well.
If folks want to learn more about this, do you have a website you can visit, or they just check the county public health website, or all of the above?
Well, if you search for Valley Fever Center for Excellence, you'll come up with the website vfce.arizona.edu. That's vfce.arizona.edu. That's our center's website.
Outstanding. Now, I will say, I don't know that I would ever associate the word excellent with valley fever. Just my perspective, Doctor.
Well, it's a very important disease in the state of Arizona, and we hope to try to manage it better.
Very good. And again, just kind of walk us through so folks know and they're informed, what would be the types of symptoms that would be indicative? So fever, aches and pains?
Right. Those are often very, very commonly aches and pains, myalgias, joints hurting very much, as well as chest pain, cough, and respiratory symptoms. And one of the common symptoms, and often the very last to go away, is very profound fatigue. And that sounds like, oh, just it's a minor thing, but it can be fatigue that keeps you from going to work. People who want to work and never have missed a day of work in their lives get this kind of fatigue. It's sort of like long COVID. It can last for many weeks to months.
Wonderful. Okay, Dr. Galgiani, thank you much for joining us here on the Buckmaster Show today. And keep in touch with us. Let us know how long do you think before that vaccine is readily available to the general public? Is there a way to guess? Or?
Well, for the veterinary vaccine, we're hopeful for 2024. For the humans, if money was no object, we could have it probably through the FDA within 8 years. But we're right now trying to get more and more people, more and more resources to make this happen, to get the vaccine through to humans.
Yeah, I think I need to call someone in Congress about that. Doctor, thank you so much for sharing your information with the Buckmaster Show today.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks, Ben.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster here. If you'd like to give us a call, 790-2040 is the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Line live line. You know, we talked a little bit about animals and Valley Fever. When we come back, we're going to talk more about animals with Monica Dangler from the Pima Animal Care Center. Stick around.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill. Hey, listen, if you need a change of pace and you're looking to get out of town, consider a visit to our friends at Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Lots of things to do in the 3-million-acre Gila National Forest. It's a small town with big culture coming up in September. They've got the Rolling Stones Gym and Mineral Show, a taste of downtown, a red paint powwow, and, of course, the Grant County Fair. You can learn more. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. It's only a three-hour drive from Tucson, so it's great for weekend visits. We're back on the Buckmaster Show here in the Green Things Socolo Village Studios. We're going to talk a little bit about animals, one of my favorite subjects, Monica. And joining us is Monica Dangler, who's with the Pima Animal Care Center. Monica, how are you today?
I am great. Thank you so much for having us today.
So on the commercial break, we were talking about trap, neuter, return and our cats and all that other kind of stuff. And I just want to say, I shared with you my frustration. Please, if you have an animal, get it microchipped, because Laura and I go out there and we have a lot of stray cats and we catch them and we're going to, you know, trap them and neuter them. And you know what? If you weren't responsible enough to microchip your pet, it's not my problem if they come home missing missing some pieces and parts, but the you also on occasion offer free microchips. So it's not even like it's going to be expensive.
Right. Yeah. So we do free microchipping regularly for both dogs and cats. So that's really great for pets to get back home. And then with cats, we also offer TNR, and all of the cats that we TNR get a microchip too, because we know cats like to invite themselves to other people's houses. So that way we know where to return them back, regardless of who has them.
So for folks like who aren't like me, who are informed about that, TNR is trap, neuter, return, and explain the concept of that to us.
Yeah, so trap, neuter, return is where community members would trap loose outdoor cats. Cats don't have the same leash laws that dogs do, so they're allowed to be cats. So you would trap them, bring them into a participating a vendor to get them sterilized, and then you just return them back. Like I said, a lot of times cats aren't necessarily unowned. They're just venturing around, and they've got a couple different people that they like to visit throughout the day. So that helps keep their population steady, and they're not reproducing, and we have more cats than we need. And it allows them to be safe and run around and have the five homes that feed them all the different things.
Is there a territorial factor in there as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, cats can spread out fairly far. They can go a few houses away and visit. And it's not uncommon for outdoor cats or indoor-outdoor cats, like I said, to have multiple homes. Have breakfast with you and then come to my house and have dinner with me. They enjoy that, and it's just part of their socialization.
We've got, as I mentioned, six rescues, and we put they're only allowed outside with supervision. We don't let our cats wander, but we did put in some cat grass for our cats to enjoy, and now the neighbors' cats are coming over and you know, grazing on the salad bar as well. What have you got? I assume you're not empty. I assume there's lots of lovables out there who still need homes. Is there any category right now that's a higher priority for y'all than not?
Yeah, so we're very full, specifically with dogs. We've got quite a few kittens too, so if you need kittens or you want to foster, we've got that for you. Dogs, we've got everything. We've got lots of big dogs, but we also have a ton of small dogs and puppies. And the small dogs are real cute. They're like little poodle mixes. They're pretty stinking cute, and so are the puppies. They're available. You can come into the shelter today or tomorrow. We're open till 7 during the week, 10 to 5 on the weekends. All fees are waived for adoption. And of course, they come sterilized with a microchip and up to date on vaccinations. So you save a lot of money that way, too.
The microchip doesn't expire, right? Do you need to update that on occasion? If you, let's say you can no longer keep the animal, can they bring that animal back and say, okay, now the animal is with Aunt Susie and Tempe?
Yeah, so they don't even need to come back. So the microchip, when you leave the shelter, the information you give us will automatically be registered on that chip. If at any point in time you rehome the pet, maybe you move, you change your phone number, you can go on to foundanimals.org, I believe, and you can microchip or register your microchip for free. There's lots of places you can register them or with the chip company itself, but Found Animals, do it for free. It's super easy, and just keep it up to date. So when they do go missing, the finders can get a hold of you and get them back right away.
I was sharing with you, Monica, my wife is a very talented animal behaviorist. In fact, we've got a cat that responds to hand signals, which if you know anything about cats, that's pretty darn amazing. But one of the first things she taught me after we were married and I started to explore what she did for a living is that it's as much about training the human as it is the animal. And very often, the mistake that people make is they're not matched, particularly when it comes to dogs. Cats, whatever, you know, forget about them. But when it comes to dogs, they're not matched with the right animal for their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a couch potato, I don't want something that, you know, is high energy dog. So one of the services that you also provide that I think is amazing is you have, I'll use the quotation figures, counselors, but basically folks that will work with that family and say, okay, let's talk about your lifestyle and make sure you get matched with the right type of dog, so that we don't see them back here in 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. So when people come in, right, they can walk around the kennels, they see dogs, you think it's really cute. You'll fill out a dog survey. It's real short, just some basic questions to help us find out about your lifestyle. You know, how long are you out of the house? Do you have a fenced yard? What kind of fence? Do you have other pets in your house? Do you have children, right? Because not all dogs like all of those things. And that way we're able to then point you in the right direction for a dog that fits your lifestyle, because that is really important. You know, we see a lot of these dogs that come in are shepherds, Malinois, huskies. They're not for everybody, right? Huskies jump tall fences on the regular. So trying to make sure we put them in the right situation, both for the people and the pets. It's traumatic having to bring a pet back or losing a pet.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, don't be selfish. Think about the animal too, not just yourself. So do you have any big adoption events coming up that people need to know about?
We do. We have a really fun one coming up the 26th of August. It's a Saturday. We're actually going to be open later. So we normally close at 5 on Saturdays. We'll be open 5. We'll be open earlier, but we'll be open late until 8. There'll be food trucks, games for the kids, lots of fun stuff. So we're really excited. We wanted to do this event in the heat of the summer so that it'll be cooler when you come out to meet those dogs as opposed to sitting out in sweltering heat.
And when they get their new puppy, is it too late for them to enter them into the calendar contest?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I am not sure what the deadline date for the calendar contest is for Friends of Pack, but I know that they do it annually. So if you miss the deadline, you can always vote for one of the cutest puppies or cats. Actually, I saw a tortoise on there. So it should be pretty exciting to see who's the calendar pets.
I don't know that I would ever associate the word cute with the tortoise, but they deserve love too.
That's
or,
right.
You know, if you're like me and you're a real slacker, maybe consider adopting a snake.
That's right.
Not a lot of attention required with a snake. So what other things have you got coming up that are for? Well, let me back up a little bit. For people who have never done this before, and I encourage you, if you have a place in your home, if you have a fenced yard, if you have some kids that maybe need another companion, please consider adopting a shelter pet. There's just such a need out there, and there's just a infinite amount of love waiting to come into your home. In general, for your average person, what are they looking as far as costs?
Yeah. So we try to make the process easy. We try to make it accessible for everybody. And if adopting isn't the right thing for you, maybe you're not ready to make that commitment, you travel a lot, you can also be a foster. So you take them into your home for a temporary amount of time, which is great for us. Most of the animals that come to the shelter are strays, so we don't know anything other than they're really cute. So that's also a great way to help those pets and also have that attention. But you just come on in, look at some pets, they have little tickets, fill out a survey, and then we'll let you know everything we know about those pets. And a lot of times we know a lot because we evaluate every pet in a playgroup situation and know things from volunteers and fosters.
I just had an odd thought come up in my mind. I mean, again, folks, you know, microchip your pet. But if I didn't have my pet microchipped and they end up at your center, can I come in with proof? Or too bad, so sad?
No, absolutely. We want to get every pet back home that we can.
Okay.
We recently just launched an application with Petco Love Lost. So what's great about it is it uses facial recognition for dogs and cats.
Oh, cool.
So if you lose a pet, you can upload it. Say, I lost my pet. Here's a picture. If the pet's in our shelter, it'll tell you it's a pack. Go on down and get it. If a good Samaritan is holding onto it, it will put you in contact, and there's a nice private way to interact with them. And then same with finders. You find a dog, upload, or a cat, upload their picture. And if somebody said, I lost my pet, then it'll connect you guys together, which is great.
And give us your website real quick, Monica.
www.pima.gov /animal care.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us today, and thanks for all the great news.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Last suggestion from me, invest in pet insurance. Call me. I'll give you lots of great companies. I'll save you a lot of money. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Find the podcast at buckmastershow.com, and please send your prayers out to Bill and Ann. Take care.